You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Let's review. At the heart of James' message is faith without works is dead. And when we hear that, we tend to think of all the things we should be doing. That is, we think about acting charitably towards others. We think about doing something tangible and measurable for another person. In the third chapter of the epistle, however, the author of James expands the definition of doing to include saying. What we say and how we speak to others is either a good work or a bad work. It either demonstrates our faith or it demonstrates our hypocrisy. If we do not bridle our tongue, James tells us, our whole practice of religion is worthless. If you want the whole story, I encourage you to go to James 3 to read that chapter. But to get us started, this introductory verse from James 1 is a good place to start in considering the significance of what and how we express ourselves.
Our words of wisdom are from James chapter 1, verse 26.
If any think they are religious and do not bridle their tongues, but deceive their hearts, their religion is worthless.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
I told this Mullah Nasruddin story recently, but it's just too good not to repeat. So, it wasn't unusual for Mullah Nasruddin to be challenged to a debate. On one occasion, a philosopher, having made an appointment to dispute with Nasruddin, arrived at the appointed hour and found Nasruddin away from home. Nasruddin had completely forgotten their plan and was in a tea house playing table games and telling stories with his friends. After waiting for a while, the philosopher grew angry. Picking up a piece of chalk, he scrawled, "Stupid oaf!" on Nasruddin's door and left in a huff. As soon as Nasruddin got home and saw this, he rushed to the philosopher's house. "I'm so sorry for not having been home," he said. "I completely forgot our appointment. Of course, I remembered the appointment as soon as I saw that you'd left your name on my door." My guess is that all of us have said things we regret later. Sometimes we don't even intend harm by our words, but they seem to do their damage nonetheless. As children, we used to chant, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." Usually as a defense after someone had said something hurtful. We wanted to believe it. We truly wanted to believe that the taunting and teasing of classmates could roll off us like water off a duck's back. But it's not true. Words hurt. They can't break bones, but they can break spirits. They can wound people. Considering the contentious nature of our political reality these days, the message of today's text is especially important. James' theme is practical Christianity, doing something with our religion, letting our religion transform our behavior. So, thinking about the way we speak about and to other people is a natural way of doing our faith. If, as Christians, our goal is maturity, going on to perfection, as Wesley would say, then it follows that our speech would take on a different tenor out of the reality of a changed heart. Matthew 12 has Jesus say, "For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart." And James follows up with the warning to watch what you say, or all your efforts are worthless. How can you tell what a person's heart is like? You can tell by what they say, and vice versa. It all starts with being intentional. 2,000 years ago, the rabbis pondered this quandary. It's customary to compliment a bride on how beautiful she looks at her wedding. But what if this particular bride isn't so beautiful? Is it permissible to lie? Is it better to avoid saying anything? They concluded that lying isn't acceptable and that there are many other options available. You've never looked more radiant, or you are positively glowing tonight. Whenever possible, find a way of being for others, not down on them, and will change your outlook on the world. Sometimes we feel goaded into responding in ways that end up hurting our overall cause. I recently got a couple of snarky emails from a person that disagreed with some things that I had preached. Now, I am usually able to let pompous comments regarding something I've preached roll off my proverbial duck back, especially when the person isn't a part of the Fountains. I know that they are objectively wrong, and I absolutely know that nothing I could ever say would change their mind. But for whatever reason, they had one, caught me at just the right or wrong moment, and two, they had successfully pushed whatever buttons provoked me into writing back with a total scorched earth reply. Wow, did it feel good to write? Totally justified, brilliant arguments, and totally unnecessarily cruel. Not that it makes any difference, the damage was done, but I ended up sending an apology. But what James has me wrestling with is examining what led me to write something that was so out of character for me. Or was it out of character? Is that my character? Yikes. It would have been so much better for me to have maintained a positive tone and objectively laid out a response and leave it at that. But because the letter writer had opened with pomposity and sarcasm, I got sucked into responding with, "I'll see your patronizing tone and raise it with some condescension and disrespect." Needless to say, that's a recipe for no one getting anywhere, and me becoming just another practitioner of our culture's unhealthy abandonment of civil dialogue. And to one degree or another, I think we all do it. We may not embarrass ourselves by actually saying it out loud, but James warns us, bridling our tongues is necessary. Or as Paul reminded the Romans in quoting Proverbs, live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud. Do not be conceited. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. We are forever comparing ourselves to others. Sometimes building them up, sometimes tearing them down. But when we compare ourselves to others, someone always wins and someone always loses. In regard to my unbridled response, I chose, out of frustration, to communicate in a way that tore someone else down, rather than infuse the moment with what, in hindsight, could have been an objective and maybe, just maybe, more helpful tone. Yisrael Meir Kagan was a 19th century rabbi who also went by the name the Chofetz Chaim, the desirer of life, a reference to his book on guarding one's tongue. In it, He offers 9 guidelines for getting beyond just saying nice things and moving towards a spiritual maturity. Don't spread a negative image of someone, even if that image is true. Don't share information that can cause physical, financial, emotional, or spiritual harm. Don't embarrass people, even in jest. Don't pretend that writing or body language or innuendo is not speech. Do not speak against a community, race, ethnic group, gender, or age group. Don't gossip, even to your spouse, relatives, or close friends. Don't repeat gossip, even when it is generally known. Don't tell people negative things said about them, for this can lead to needless conflict. And don't listen to gossip. Give everyone the benefit of the doubt. James says the tongue reveals a lot about one's inner life. Hey, if a spring gives refreshing, life-giving water, he writes, that says something about its source, deep in the heart of the earth. If it's brackish, that says something too. Look, let's call a fig, and an olive. If you're growing and nurturing one kind of plant, don't expect it to suddenly sprout with another fruit. What you sprout is what you've nurtured. Throughout his argument, James uses some great images to help define the difficult task that we have ahead. Dynamic images of guidance, including a horse's bit or a ship's rudder. Under the control of a steady hand, both are used to give direction and get where you're going. The bit in a horse's mouth or the rudder on a ship are both so small, yet they control a whole animal or a whole vessel. The writer of Ephesians chimes in on the same idea. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. Taming the tongue is more than refraining. It is more than not cursing, not gossiping, and not speaking harshly. Taming the tongue has a positive side. Taming the tongue means that you also speak words that edify and words that give grace. Does this mean never talking about people? No, but be careful about what we say and how we say it. Even the most complimentary conversation can sometimes turn on a dime and start to tear someone down. They're so good at that, but just try this simple rule. Try to avoid talking about other people when they are not present. Even if you don't know their sect, most folks are familiar with the Orthodox Jewish movement called the Hasidim. One of their distinctive characteristics are their clothes and hairstyles, which have their roots in an 18th century mystical movement begun by the Baal Shem Tov. If the word Hasidim sounds familiar, it may be because the root word of Hasidic is chesed, or grace in English. And here's something to consider for today's theme. Their founder taught that each of us is born with a fixed number of words to speak. And when we have spoken the last of these, we die. How would everyday speech change if we functioned with that assumption? This idea was picked up in an Eddie Murphy movie a number of years ago, 1,000 Words. If you only had a fixed number of words, what kind would you choose? It's a good teaching to remember. Since I don't know how many words I was born to speak, do I want to die with my last words having been, "Stupid oaf"? In speaking kind words, his so much more than saying nice things. Rabbi Israel Salenter said, "Say what you mean and do what you say. Your words reflect the best and worst that is in you. But even if you say the right thing, can you follow through with what you've said?" In Matthew, Jesus asks the disciples, "What do you think? A man had two sons. He went to the first and said, 'Son, go and work in the vineyard today.' The son answered, 'I will not.' But later he changed his mind and went. The father went to the second son and said the same. And that son answered, 'I go, sir.' But he didn't go. Which of the two sons did the will of his father? What do you think they said? The first, right? You bet. Because talk is cheap. It's our behavior that truly defines us. Listen carefully to what you say. Say what you mean, and then do what you say. The power of speech is one of the greatest gifts that we have as human beings. And yet the tongue can curse and break human hearts, destroy reputations, promote discord and strife, set families, communities, and nations at war with each other. By bridling our tongue, we may bless and communicate happiness, dispel sorrow, remove despair, cheer the faint-hearted, inspire the discouraged, and say 100 other things to uplift one another. So slow down. Stop talking for the sake of talking. Stop typing for the sake of typing. And for our stream of thought today, here are three questions for us to ask ourselves before we speak or press send. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And remember, some things are true and cruel. More often than not, they don't need to be said. Don't get caught up in words that tear another down in order to build yourself up. Listen carefully to what you say as you are saying it, and be prepared to make a mid-sentence correction that steers away from whatever agenda you might be pushing, which is usually trying to make yourself look as good as possible. Be ready to catch yourself. Our words, spoken or emailed, are one of the primary ways of complicating our lives. And life is already complicated enough. Why make it more so because we can't resist responding in the often ill-advised passion of the moment? As disciples, let us do the work of faith by using our tongues to bless and not hurt, comfort, not criticize, encourage, not discourage. Let us be a people of tamed tongues, tongues that put love first and practice the loving kindness of the Spirit of life. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.